Can I invite all of you for questions and comments? You have here a smorgasbord of both presenters, but also topics that we can address and keep on discussing. And there will be a mic going around. And I thought that we could collect maybe 2 to 3 questions at a time. And please please stand up and say your name as well and where you work or your current affiliation, if you like. So I have first Christian and then the lady in the back over there. Okay. And then you. The man in the white shirt.
Thank you very much. Christian Alpes, my name. I'm also working at Volker Bonnet Academy. I have one question, one comment, and the question is actually related to the last point that you mentioned, and what, because I think that's kind of the lingering, one of the lingering dilemmas that wasn't mentioned among the other dilemmas, the relation between the need to adapt, to be flexible, and to have principles as a donor or as an organization, and what does that then mean for a donor for Sweden? Where do you draw the line when it comes to implementing feminist foreign policy, but you realize in the process with talking, elaborating with local actors that this is no way to do. Do you go back? Do you withdraw? Or do you push? Where's the red line for that? And just a comment more. I just came back from a couple of months with the UNDP in Geneva, and about the things that are happening, I found it exciting to see there that there the sustaining peace and sustainable development goals really are happening in the sense that people are either because they're personally interested or because the donors call, picked up the phone and said, how do we relate our project to the sustaining peace agenda and to the sustainable development goals, that actually people are going back to the drawing board and rethink how can we relate to these new ideas and new approaches. So it's actually happening, which I find quite fascinating for just another document that's coming out.
I think we can take 2 more questions. There's a lady in the back. Yep.
Thank you. I'm Lena from Swedish Committee for Afghanistan. I want to bring up 3 quick things, which I think are missing from your otherwise excellent report and very timely. First, I want to thank you for this and for the timeliness of the report. I was in Brussels yesterday and saw a few people at DEVCO and also at Foreign Affairs of EU, the European Commission, and we were talking about local peace building. And the particular persons we were meeting were really interested to know more. So I'm going to make a big reference of this seminar to them directly. And they are now doing a new strategy for Afghanistan, so it's really so welcome for us specifically. But the 3 things I want to ask about is military and finance, and then on the positive side, the women mediators, which I think Chris knows very well about, the Nordic and Swedish initiative on women mediators, including quite a few in Afghanistan. So on the military, we must realize, and Urban mentioned this, that the limitation of development, and we have to realize also that local people see us all foreigners at the same sheet, all of us. And whether we are in development work or we come as soldiers or we come as humanitarian or we come as NGOs, there is a tendency, and actually the Swedish Committee has made a study on this, a quick study, but at least an indication that local people consider us all somehow connected to the military. And in a country like Afghanistan, that is disastrous for us. I mean, we risk to completely lose trust from the local people, the way that the foreign soldiers behave. And if not all foreign soldiers are committing war crimes, some of them do, and then local people see us all the same shit. Sorry for the bad language. So this is a real challenge, and I don't know if you've been able, I've only read the summary, if you've been able to look at the phenomena of trust somehow. And then the other thing, the finance, So in Afghanistan, there are quite a few initiatives locally, track three, I would call them, going on for years with consultations in all provinces with complete Afghan ownership and Afghan different kinds of civil society organizations. But they compete for finance from foreign donors, and therefore they don't want to cooperate. So if they could cooperate, if we could somehow support a system whereby they don't have to compete for finance, then it would be a more massive local movement, I'm sure. And then finally, the women mediators. So have you been able to see any such thing developing? Do you know any research going on where women mediators have made a difference anywhere? Thank you very much.
And then I think up here in the mic in the middle.
In the back.
Oh, sorry. Next right.
Hi, my name is Cora Noor. I'm a freelancer for a consultant freelancer. I've worked many years for Somalia also, and I have both comments and question. My comments, I start with the comment, which is you mentioned the report a lot on local participation and decision making. And in my experience working in Eastern Africa, Somalia, and Kenya, and I have seen a lot of times that international communities, at that time I was working for the UN, meeting exactly, as Chris mentioned, the state level. And we have seen many times that local participation or involvement was missing. So my question relates to both the reporter, the academia, and also the policymakers. How can you more concrete involve the local involvement and regardless government shift? And is it possible that maybe to create a committee, a local committee, whereby representing both religious leaders, women groups, it could be that's one aspect. And more concretely, and I have seen also there was a lack of context knowledge. Working, coming as international community, as you just mentioned, being there maybe maximum 3 days, trying to solve the problem, I mean, it's impossible. And it's very complicated, and that's a big dilemma. So my question is to Urban and Chris. How can you more think in concretely to involve the local aspect, which is sustaining regarding the governmentship? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. So we have three people asked the questions, but a set of questions directed to our different panelists here. Who would like to start?
The panelists.
Okay. All of you, but Joachim can start. Okay.
I'll try to be very brief. The being flexible versus being principled. I guess that's one of the key problems. And I think you, Urban, asked the question where, what do we do if we obviously see that in our attempts to do something good in the process, there is a lot of bad things going on that we normally do not accept. I mean, what do we do? Do we kind of continue seeing all the things we see and hope for the best? Or do we put a stop to it, put a stop to the support to it? There's no final answer to this. I think there is need to be a principled approach, but principles should be on a rather abstract level under which there need to be flexibility. The flexibility should be informed, related to context. It should have the long-term process in mind, and at the end of the day, there need to be judgment calls. The last one is perhaps a difficult one. Who is doing the judgment calls? Are the individual project managers or who is doing it? But I think there need to be a certain understanding for that there are judgment calls, and there once in a while the judgment calls will not be perfect. But I would defend the idea of principles on a higher level and flexibility on a lower level. And by the way, I'm right now doing a minor work for UN One in Cambodia, which is exactly for the reason you mentioned, that they have also felt the need to react to the higher emphasis on sustaining peace and wanted to make conflict analysis and start preparing themselves for more projects along this line. We don't have too much to say on military in this aspect of local peace building. In terms of finance, it's a little bit of a sad story, I think, where local projects aren't as... Well, there are many. They are administratively difficult because it takes time and it takes effort. And they're also not as glamorous, perhaps, as many others. So it's, I think the local peace building is suffering from, the local turn of peace building is suffering from lack of finance, among other things. We haven't come across women mediators. We have come across women being elected in local councils and from that position being far superior to the men in the same positions, because the men in those positions have somehow often been involved in the actual warfare and the violence, whereas women has to a lesser extent been involved in that, and from that platform been much better at reconciliation and mediation. Thank
you. There was a question to you, Urban, as well, and also Chris, perhaps on women mediators.
Well, I actually don't exactly know what the question was, but I'll just tell you something about the context of Sweden and women in mediation. As you probably referred to, our Minister for Foreign Affairs has initiated a Swedish network for women mediators, and we actually have one in this room, in the back. She can tell us herself. But the thing is, I think, and this regards to the track six again, level one plus two plus three, is that it came out of a frustration that only 4% of chief of signatories to peace agreements were women. Track one, we're talking here now. And that there were very few women on at track one level, even at the mediation table. So by selecting these few women, there's only 9 women in Sweden that are the minister's special representatives for women in peace processes. Is we don't expect these 9 women to roam around the world, you know, waging peace. But symbolically, they carry quite some weight. And it's in the interactions and in the meetings and by traveling. And Lena can tell you herself, but when we meet women from other networks, from the African networks or Mediterranean networks, it's that sort of trust building and inspiring each other, showing support, that sort of, in a way, sisterhood. That's one thing. But also the Women in Peace Processes project, if you like, is bigger than only those mediators, of course. It's about supporting women in peace processes. And I think maybe you're referring to the training that we've had in Afghanistan, supporting local women peace builders from the provinces. And FBA did the training with the support of the embassy, but also with the participation of one of the women from the mediation network. Can I just quickly answer the question?
Can I stop you?
Yeah?
No, I can't. Go ahead.
Okay. You were asking about how do we concretely include. I think actually, was it principle 4 from the doing development differently? Or 3. Work with through local conveners who mobilize all those with a stake. And that means also those, you were saying, not only those in favor or positive about whatever you're doing, but also those who might be negative or a negative force. I thought about this as I read the report, because again, who is the local? I've never worked for CEDA or the UN, but I mean, I've lived in many developing countries in my life, mostly as a researcher, and as you know, that's a privileged position in a way. You don't have to deliver anything and you can do what you want. But, okay, don't quote me on that. But the thing is, it's about organization. Because if you're on a timeline, you have a budget, and you're saying that you organize, I'm sure you've done this 100 times, organized meeting with local civil society and your international guests or donors. When you live in a community, of course, that's different. But it's you can't just meet anyone from the street, right? The people you will meet are organized somehow. They're organized in church or in a mosque or in a CSO or an international organization or university. Or in they are organized. I mean, that's the basic principle. And so for them to be able to have a voice, they must be organized. So therefore, I'm a bit concerned about what we see now in many countries, and you kind of referred to it in the case of Rwanda, and it's about the shrinking space of civil society. Because what does that do? It's suddenly it can become dangerous to organize when you have something negative to say about your own state. And that, I think, is very dangerous. I mean, we're heading in a dangerous way. I'll end there, Richard.
Thank you.
Okay, and I take over. So I just want to say that we also need to understand what is possible, because Chris has just mentioned the challenges on shrinking space. We also need to remember that if we include civil society, for example, so often that are elites, and where is then the local, and so on. So I think we need to do as good as we can. I think what we can do as policymakers is to say that inclusivity should be everywhere. Whatever we do, we should strive for as strong inclusivity as possible, and you should especially focus on women and youth, and of course other groups. But women and youth are often not included automatically in many of our contexts. I will be short, but I will say red line. If we have our values, our democratic values on human rights and gender equality, we can never negotiate, never. And they are not policy clouds. It's real. It's really wherever we are, we need to deliver on those. I think it's possible. I think that is what we should do. And we can do it also in difficult contexts, because we can still stand for our values, our policies, but we can talk to all. We can cooperate with almost all. And I think that is the... So it could be rather simple. It's not, but that is the simple approach, that no, the policies we have with us when we work. But we should be able to take the risk of talking and maybe also working with non-like-minded more. On the military, I agree it's difficult, and perceptions are difficult, and it varies in different contexts. We don't have an impact enough to change perceptions. If we are part of the international community, the main intervention is military, it's difficult. But we can be professional enough to divide labor and put on very important frameworks from where we can cooperate, because we should cooperate where it's feasible, but we should not cooperate where it's not feasible. I can just tell you that within the EU, Sweden is one of the strongest protectors, I would say, on the ODA, where Sweden is very clear on that ODA should not go to military expenses. And it seems that we are on the winning side. So that's good news, indeed. That's it.
Thank you. I'm conscious of time as well. I was thinking of a word upon, since you're both from Gothenburg, there's a shrinking time space as well, if you appreciate that. But I saw two more raised hands before that we didn't get to. One in the far back, and then lady up front. Somewhere, because I thought it was it Lena? Yeah.
Lena, yeah. Lena Sund, part of the Swedish...
Okay, thank you. I actually wasn't going to raise that, but I'll comment. First, I wanted to say that thank you for the presentation, but one thing that I particularly have liked is how you've been talking about the risk. Because I think that that's absolutely necessary, that one is allowed to allow projects or whatever to take more risks. And that has become more and more difficult in the development context risks has become more result-based, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it doesn't really work so well in any way in this context. So that I thought was very good. But then I wanted also to raise a dilemma, and I think you have, in a way, also raised that. That's in who are supporting this. I think it's extremely important what you have also been stressing, that it has to be done, there has to be ownership. We can have the national ownership, of course, overall, and we as state actors, that's been our normal partners. but when there is a local conflicts, obviously there has to be the local ownership. You still talk very much, I haven't read the report, but in you, about we. You know, so there is still a lot of we must. Who are we in those contexts? You know, that I think that is a dilemma. But another dilemma is, I started thinking about local conflicts already in 2002 in the DRC, when I was in Monuc at the time. And there, of course, when you have look at Eastern Congo, you see so many local conflicts. So again, someone raised this, that I think it was you sitting in front of me, that it's important that those who are working on it really are cooperating, and that there is not this fight for funding, etc., which I think there is. So I agree on that also. Okay, and then very briefly, the foreign minister's network for women mediators. I think one thing that we have stressed is that it's a broader objective than mediation. It's really to provide support to peace processes, and support to a very high extent to make sure that women from those conflicts concerned are actually involved in the processes. So that's a major objective. But then also, I think Margareta Wahlström in Afghanistan is doing something quite interesting with women, getting women in the provinces together to talk about conflict resolution and so on, and seeing what that might lead to in a broader context. I myself work on Burundi, but there it's not primarily looking at the women, trying, of course, to see if, if one can get more women involved, but it's not always possible. And then we have Birgitta Holstalani, who's been very much working on as supporting the women actors in the Syria process, etc. So that's just a few examples of what we have been doing. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, reflections. If we all can live with not going in to respond to them, we can manage one more, and then I'll hand over to Gunnar. So, please.
My name is Margareta Ingelstam, and I have been working with peace building in Eastern Croatia in the middle of the 90s. And it was called Building a Democratic Society in Eastern Slovakia, Built on a Culture of Nonviolence. And it was a very interesting project. And listening to you, I could also compare to the different experiences and results and learnings that we had. But when I also was listening to you, and I was glad that Urban and Chris mentioned the global goals, because I think that they are relevant also for us now. We are all developing countries, it's saying in the agenda. And down there, they had peace and development teams in the region working with them, listening to people, just what you also said, that it must come, the needs from the people. But listening to you also, I did that in the perspective of my focus now on the Baltic region. And what I would love to hear from you is, how do you see now, with the special situation that we have never had in the Baltic region, and with the special relation to Russia, to the Russian country and to the Russians, what can we learn from the peace-building experiences that you have made?
Thank you so much for that. I think we could go on talking for quite some time. We only rented the place until 4, so that prevents us. No, but there's a number of things here that could and should be unpacked for further discussion and in other seminars and other fora as well. And I thank you so much for raising them.